Hey there, Sports History fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
In this bonus episode of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, we commemorate the death of a famous man, Amos Alonzo Stagg, who died on March 17, 1965 at 102 years old. And we have the author of his book, Jennifer Taylor Hall, joining us to tell us all about him in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're podcasting from the Pigpen in Western Pennsylvania to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. We're releasing a special episode of the Pigskin Dispatch on March 17th. This date is known for celebrating by wearing green and coloring just about anything you could consume green too. But in football, we care to look at this day with a shade of maroon in mind. Chicago maroons, that is, for the great man of the gridiron, Coach Amos Alonzo Stagg, who died on March 17, 1965, at the age of 102. This is not a morbid day. This is a day to celebrate a great man of football. And what better way to celebrate his life and his early football innovations than to speak to someone that literally wrote the book on Stagg. Jennifer Taylor Hall wrote Amos Alonzo Stagg's College Football's Man in Motion, and we're glad to have her join us in this discussion on Coach Stagg. Jennifer Taylor Hall, welcome to the Pigpen.
Thanks for having me, Darren. Great to be here.
Well, we are sure glad to have you. If we could start off a little bit, I know you've been on a lot of podcasts here on the Sports History Network. But just for our listeners, because sometimes we have a little bit different listenership, if you could just tell us a little bit about your background and what got you interested in Coach Stagg.
Sure. So I've always loved the game, particularly the college game. One of my uncles played football for Ole Miss and went on to play for the Miami Dolphins. And I grew up hearing stories of his glory on the gridiron. And I learned the game from him, and sharing that experience of watching games and listening to him, hearing the stories, just piqued my interest. And so I began to read biographies of the great players, the great coaches, and came across the name Stagg, but never could find a biography that really told me his story. And his name came up so often that I knew he was significant to the game, and I really wanted to learn more about him, but not finding a biography that answered all my questions, I decided one needed to be written, and I was the person to do it. So I was very fortunate to have the blessing of his family, and I've actually gotten to know one of his granddaughters pretty well, and a great-grandson and a great-great-grandson. Got to spend some time with them last year pre-COVID, just they're a wonderful family, and fortunately they have saved a lot of his memorabilia, letters from Mr. and Mrs. Stagg, photographs, newspaper clippings, just wonderful history that they've preserved. And the University of Chicago also did a great job of preserving Mr. Stagg's history. They have an entire archive in the library there. And credit Mrs. Stagg. I think she was a hoarder before hoarding was a thing, but in a good way, right? She saved so many pieces of their history, and it dates back to 1890s. You know, he arrived at Chicago when the doors opened in 1892. And she arrived as a student, and they were married a couple of years later. And she saved everything that chronicled their journey, their 40-year journey there at Chicago.
Well, you can definitely tell that there's your connection to Coach Stagg in your writing, because the book is excellent, by the way. And you can tell the warm feeling you have for Coach Stagg. And I guess the family participation and, you know, the University of Chicago helping out, it doesn't hurt giving you all those great factual, significant pieces of information to put in the book. I know you've been on the other shows, and we sort of want to gear this at what Mr. Stagg did in the month of February and March, you know, because we're sort of in that time frame right now with this March 17th. And back in March 11th, I had a post, and I took some of it right from your book, and it was about Coach Stagg and John Naismith's relationship. And if you could touch on that a little bit for our listeners.
Sure. James Naismith, actually.
James Naismith. Sorry.
No. You're right. They were actually students, and Mr. Stagg was a student coach at the YMCA International School, which is now known as Springfield College in Massachusetts. But they were there in the late 1880s, and the president of the school, or superintendent he was called, needed an activity to keep the football players occupied in the wintertime, to you know, keep them well conditioned, and but also keep them out of trouble. And so you can imagine the cold in Massachusetts. And so he told James Naismith to come up with a game, an activity to keep the boys busy and in good condition. And so that's how the game of basketball was born. He literally, Naismith had 2 weeks to come up with something. And he kind of recalled some games from his childhood in Canada, and pieced some things together, and came up with the early version of basketball, which was a little rougher than we know today. It maybe had a little bit of rugby influence. The first few contests ended up with some blood, and I don't know that bones were broken, but there were a lot of bruises, let's say. But Alonzo Stagg was involved in those early games.
I know on my March 11th post, I found on a website, they had a newspaper clipping from the day after. And the writer, who really didn't know what the game was, called it a basket football game. And I found that to be interesting. And then comparing that with the little note you had in your book about it of, you know, Coach Stagg fouling every single player on a student team. I thought that was very befitting.
That's right. Yeah. And I think maybe that's why the columnist referred to it as a bit of a football game. It was pretty rough and tumble, and Mr. Stagg was right there in the middle of it. But of course, you know, the basket part of the name comes from the peach baskets that they originally used as the goals until one of the students who was in charge of fishing the ball out after every goal said, you know, this would be a lot easier if we cut the bottom out of it. And so eventually the basket morphed into a net, but when it all started, they were using peach baskets for goals.
Well, I enjoyed you. You led up to the peach basket part by, you know, you went through the whole thing with Coach Naismith, being charged with trying to come up with this game for the students. And you have a great illustration of a small conversation he had with the janitor, and you just illustrate it so well, you know, talking about the echoing off the hardwood floors and everything. It really put me into the picture of that day. And he asked for some boxes, you know, so actually the game of basketball could have been called, you know, box ball. You
know? Right. That's exactly right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great story, and one of many in your book. Now, we have some other great events that Coach Stagg was associated in the month of February and March. And I know one in particular has to do with the Big Ten Conference for athletics that happened in February.
Right. So the formation of the Big Ten Conference, but back when Mr. Stagg was involved and the representatives from the other schools, and at the time it was Illinois, Michigan, Minnesota, Purdue, and Northwestern. And they got together in February of 1896 and formed what was then known as the Western Conference. And here we are 125 years later.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Now, what significance did Coach Stagg have in those talks? I know you alluded a little bit in your book.
Right. So back at this point in time, the University of Chicago was about 4 years old, and Mr. Stagg was the athletic director and coach of really all the men's sports. But he quickly learned that football was the revenue generator. No surprise, right? But he and the other administrators, because he had a faculty level position there, realized that the Chicago name also carried enough heft with it that when other schools, even schools like Michigan and Minnesota, would come to Chicago to play, those schools benefited from playing Chicago, because at that time, Chicago was a football powerhouse and really was for really the first three decades of Mr. Stagg's tenure there. And so it just kind of naturally followed that some rivalries developed, and particularly between Chicago and Michigan. For many years, they played a Thanksgiving Day game. And then also, just because of proximity, schools like Northwestern and Purdue would play Chicago every year or every other year. And so this kind of forerunner of a conference developed, and it became a natural fit for these regional schools to form an alliance. And that's what became the Western Conference, which of course would grow and add more schools over time. But Chicago was really the heartbeat of it when it began in 1896.
And you mentioning 1896, and in your notes that we discussed before the show, you says, and you're right, it's the 125th anniversary of actually the Big Ten. You know, that's quite significant.
Right. It is. And I'm hoping that by this fall, everybody will be back in stadiums, and we'll be watching Big Ten football again, as well as all the other conferences. But certainly that's a significant anniversary to celebrate.
Most definitely. Okay. Now, if we fast forward a little bit, we stay go into month of March, but we go, you know, some 14 years ahead of that significance. Well, I guess even before that, we had some tragedies happening in football, as we know, and it's well discussed how it was a brutal game. There was players that were dying or being severely injured, and, you know, Teddy Roosevelt got involved, had Walter Camp and others that were in the football world get together and said, hey, a solution needs to be made. And it came out, among other things, the biggest one was the forward pass. And Coach Stagg was quite a proponent of the forward pass. If you could.
He certainly was. Absolutely. 1906 was the year it was legalized. And it really did transform the game. And that was a mandate that President Roosevelt really brought to bear because of, as you mentioned, the dangers of the game. So many young men were either being critically injured or even dying, that he said, if you don't do something about this, he called leaders from East Coast teams, but also Mr. Stagg, together and said, you have to change the way this game is played, or we're going to have to get rid of it because it's just not sustainable. And so one of those changes that was introduced was the forward pass. And it's hard for us, I think, to imagine the game without it. But at the time, you know, we just recently celebrated the 150th anniversary of college football. So from 1869 through the early 1900s, it was just a brutal running game, very much likened to war. And it just kind of stood to reason that men would be injured. And so the introduction of the forward pass really opened up the playing field, and it obviously spread. It provided for spread formations and a much more open game that relied on speed and skill. And for Mr. Stagg, it provided an advantage, because even in the early days when Chicago was a powerhouse, he had undersized players for the most part. And so when he could rely on their speed and their skill rather than perhaps their brawn, the forward pass kind of fit nicely into his playbook.
Now, you talk about in your book, all through it, the relationship that he had with his former players. And one thing in particular, sort of segueing the forward pass discussion into Coach Bezdik down in Arkansas that played for Mr. Stagg. If you could go into some of the attributes that those two did together for the forward pass.
Sure, absolutely. So in March of 1910, Coach Bezdik invited Mr. Stagg to come down to Fayetteville to teach his team the forward pass. And Bezdik had just taken the reins at Arkansas a few years earlier. And he was struggling against other teams that had already adopted the forward pass. Imagine losing to St. Louis University. That's what happened, because back then the Billikens were a solid football team, but they used the forward pass. And so Bezdik recognized that it was an innovation he needed to adopt, but it wasn't as easy as simply doing it. He needed to be taught, and his players needed to be taught. And so who did he call? He called his mentor, the man who had helped pioneer it. And so Mr. Stagg traveled down to Fayetteville, brought Walter Eckersall, one of his former stars and obviously a friend of Bezdik's, to Fayetteville. And the two of them set up a clinic. For 2 weeks, they were down here. I say here, I live in Fayetteville. They came to Northwest Arkansas and had a laboratory where they experimented. And actually, Mr. Stagg kind of tweaked his playbook a bit as he saw another team running the plays that he had developed. So it was beneficial to everyone, I think.
Yeah, and I think a lot of those concepts are the basis of the forward pass formations and some of the route trees and everything that we know today.
Right.
That's a very, very fascinating. Now, why don't we get into a little bit of some of Mr. Stagg's other contributions to football, if you would, please.
Sure, absolutely. And you mentioned expanding his playbook. One of the things he did was he developed the man in motion formation, and that actually came before the forward pass. But once the pass was introduced, he was able to really expand the playbook with the forward pass and different formations. And so the shift and other things, again, that are so common to the game today, so familiar to us, were innovative at the time. And, he spent 40 years at Chicago fine-tuning that playbook. He was forced into retirement when he turned 70, but he was by no means ready to retire. So he took that playbook to California and coached for another dozen years at College of the Pacific. So again, he was able to continue his innovative style. And as you can imagine, College of the Pacific in the 1930s and 40s wasn't recruiting powerhouse athletes. So he had a lot of undersized players, and he had to get creative, but that's exactly what he did. And he was named Coach of the Year there when he was 83 years old. So he was very successful really everywhere he went.
Oh, absolutely. And he was, he actually played at Yale for Walter Camp, who as many know as the father of football. So there's a great connection too, to the beginning of the game.
That's right. That's right. And it's interesting because football was not his first love. He was a baseball star, but he joined the football team in his upperclassman years at Yale. And at that time, graduate students could continue their eligibility. So he ended up playing when he was a graduate student at Yale and, of course, was a star. But his first love was actually baseball.
Wow, very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. And I guess we enjoyed this book so much. I mean, I love the book. I reference it all the time in my posts and podcasts. And do you have anything else coming up that you're working on, or, you know, in the game of football or any other genre? Because your writing style is so unique and it's very entertaining.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Actually, I am working on another book. I'm working on the biography of Fritz Kreisler.
Oh.
I came to know him in doing my research for the Stag book, and actually got to know one of his granddaughters. And she asked me if I'd be interested in telling her grandfather's story. And for the Big Ten faithful listening to the podcast, you of course know Kreisler's name because of his connection to Michigan. And so that's my current project. Unfortunately, COVID has kind of put the brakes on my research. The library at Michigan is closed right now to non-resident researchers, but as soon as it opens, I plan to get up there and really pour over the Kreisler papers and have that available.
Now, he was part of those point a minute teams, I believe is what they called. Then you had that one.
That was actually Fielding Yost.
Oh, that was Yost. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yost was before Kreisler, but Kreisler really brought Michigan to the level of prominence that it is where it is today. He was the athletic director for many years and of course, football coach, and the basketball arena is named in his honor. But he really elevated athletics at Michigan, but he did follow Yost, who was a pioneer in his own right, and he was a contemporary of Stagg. But so much of what Kreisler learned was from playing for Stagg and then coaching with him at Chicago. Kreisler coached with Stagg for about 10 years at Chicago before he moved on. So,
and that was quite the rivalry back at the turn of the century, turn of the 19th and the 20th century, that Michigan and Chicago in football. And I know going back to your Alonzo Stagg book, it's that's another interesting point.
It absolutely was. And in 1905, Michigan traveled to Chicago for their annual Thanksgiving Day game, and they were on a 50 plus game win streak, and that came to a halt on Thanksgiving Day 1905 with a 2-0 Chicago victory. So quite a story, that game. I tell the story in the book, but it was quite a rivalry. They would play every other year in Ann Arbor. And so they had a following on both campuses. But at that time, Michigan and Chicago really were the leaders of that fledgling Western Conference.
Well, that's definitely two fascinating stories that have the overlap. And I can see the connection, how you got to know about Coach Kreisler by doing your research on Amos Alonzo Stagg.
Right.
You know, We really appreciate you coming today. Is there any social media following that you'd like to share with us so our listeners can follow your work?
Certainly. I'm on Facebook at Jennifer Taylor Hall Writes, and I'm also on Twitter. My handle there is 3 Hall Bros in honor of my three sons. But absolutely, I would love a follow on social media, and I will keep your listeners posted with the progress of the Chrysler book.
Oh, absolutely. We're definitely interested in that. We can't wait for that to come out. And hopefully you can get into that research library up there at Michigan soon, and we can all attend football games and enjoy the great game once again in person.
Absolutely.
Jennifer, I thank you very much for your time today and spending with us and sharing. And we'll have you back on again real soon, because there's a lot of events in the calendar for Coach Stagg is associated with.
Absolutely. I would love to come back. Thank you, Darren.
All right. Thank you.
We're taking a peek over at the chains and the down marker. It's fourth and long. We're going to have to punt the ball and get on out of here, but we'll have another series tomorrow for your football history headlines, so be sure to tune in. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck, because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.